people who love them.
This is The Thing About Cars. Thank you for joining us. We are recording as usual from Strongbox West on the west side of Atlanta. With me at the table are...
Katie, Becca.
Ben.
And I'm Mickey. Thanks for joining us today. We wanted to point you, as usual, to our Facebook page and our website, thethingaboutcars.com, or find us on Facebook at The Thing About Cars. We always welcome your questions, your comments, your general feedback. Let's start with Katie today. Katie, what have you got?
I read something the other day about it, the Rhino XT, the Wrangler. This company put a Hellcat engine in it.
What?
Yes. And they souped it up. They basically bought a Wrangler and completely changed and upgraded everything from the ground up, but kept the body. It says that the company used it in, or is going to be in, the Fate and the Furious movie. It's 707 horsepower. I just think that's weird to me. I'm like, why?
Very.
Why is it weird?
Yeah,
like there's 707 horsepower in a Jeep.
Yeah,
not really a race car. It's a off-road. Yeah,
wretched excess.
Makes me wonder about the chassis.
Yes,
I know people have told me that the Jeep has done a lot to change the issues that the CJ chassis used to have, but that makes me wonder: do you really want to add that much horsepower to something that used to roll over so easily? Also makes me want to ask, should there really be 8 Fast and the Furious movies?
Yeah.
<All right. laughs> One thing is, but I think Katie's right. It is kind of weird to have that much power behind the wheels of something that's not supposed to go that fast to begin with.
Exactly.
It sounds like putting a Corvette engine in a truck. Like,
I meant a small older Ranger.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I could actually see, though. That I could see. There's enough people out there that do sport trucks that, I don't know, I would think more like putting a Corvette engine into a mail car.
Yeah.
Kind of. Could you see the mail being delivered that quickly?
Really express delivery.
Yes.
Well, even for off-road type things, a whole lot of power isn't necessarily, you know, what you want. I mean, because if you're doing winching or pulling your, you know, maybe if you're doing a tug of war with another truck.
If you're going in a tour.
Because off-road, you're generally in a really low-geared situation anyway, and in a really, really low gear, you don't really need that much power to turn it.
Right.
Right.
It is weird. But I guess some people will do anything, right? I mean, did they do it just for the movie?
No, that's the article that I read. It says that the company made it. They were going to like sell it for like $138,000.
And they'll probably have no shortage of customers.
One of the movie producers or something saw it and was just like, "Yes, we want that on."
But
in
see,
the movie.
Okay, and that's where I think that makes some sense, because if you're doing Fast and Furious movies, it's all about extreme, sensationalistic, over-the-top approaches to doing things in cars.
And not necessarily illogical.
But they're actually also going to...
Right.
Yeah, they're also going to, like, reproduce it as well.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, could it be competing along the now more vacant H3 type of idea? The Hummer, where it was a sport utility, and I'm doing the bunny ears with that. It really wasn't about going off-road, so I don't know, maybe something from that angle. Maybe just the look and feel of it, but you're really getting more of a road car.
I want to know, can I take it out with a submarine?
Right. You know, possibly.
Have you guys seen the new movie yet?
No.
No.
I haven't either.
I don't. After, like, the fourth movie, I'm just like, why do you keep making this?
That's just it. And I had to roll my eyes a lot at the promos. I believe it was of the third one, was it? Tokyo Drift? Where they kept talking about it's a new style of racing. And no, it's not. That's not new. That's been around for a very long time. And it just, I don't know, they lost me there. I've seen 1 and 2, and after that, I'd rather go back and rewatch Bullet or something.
I don't mind them so much. I mean, on the one hand, it's just cars, and it's a gigantic soap opera built behind cars, nice cars, fast cars. I have this other theory about television in general, and entertainment in general, not just television, but if you stick a character around on a screen for long enough, they eventually become a caricature of themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you look at episode one of a show that you really, really like, and then you look at the last episode of a show that you really, really like, and now that I think that there's, you'll see a progression where everyone sort of becomes a cartoon of who they, you know, started off as. Because if someone handed me one of those vehicles, I'm not sure what I would do with it.
Sell it?
But, yes.
I could use
sell it and buy a regular Jeep.
Or sell it for car parts, you know. Right. Hey, I've got projects.
Yeah.
We're talking to each other all the time behind the scenes, right? So who was it that posted that Challenger with the demon engine, or the demon Challenger that doesn't have a roll cage in it, and that's why they don't race it?
I posted a follow-up.
Yeah.
Somebody had posted that, oh, they call it the American National Racers Association, but it's actually just the NHRA. Mm-hmm. The ANHRA, or however it was put in the article. But I did the follow-up of, here's the real thing, and it has to do with there's no roll cage in it. Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, that's kind of a funny thing, because probably 99% of these sold are never, ever going to see a racetrack.
Mm-mm.
So they don't. Either, it makes no sense to put one in it. If someone wants to go take one racing, they're going to put a roll cage in anyway, because there would be a lot of other safety equipment they'll be putting in.
Well, if they wanted to sell cars just on people, I guess, pulling it out of the box and taking it to a drag strip.
Right.
Like, you know, they used to do then, they would want to keep the horsepower down lower,
mm-hmm.
so these people wouldn't have to do modifications to it to meet the guidelines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The premise of what happened with, you know, I've always got to go to Mustang somehow. The Hertz edition that they had was literally out of the box. Joe Blow, that had never raced in his life, rents a car, takes it to a track. You know, if you're going to sell your car as it's got this much down at the drag strip, it needs to be out of the box to bring new people into it. Otherwise, you're going to end up with just the same people that have been there. And
I don't know, though. I mean, in my mind, if I want to take a car to the track, I don't want an out-of-the-box solution to do it. I want to go under the hood. I want to mess with that thing, right? I want to make sure that...
And I agree. Yeah. I totally like that, too. But there are so many people now that fancy themselves race car drivers because something came out of the box fast. Because nowadays, things are coming with so much more horsepower than they used to.
Porsche does that. Porsche, you know, the track down here in Atlanta, and I think there's another one somewhere where you could just go and drive to your heart's content. None of these Porsches are heavily modified. They're all legitimately fast out of the box, as you say.
Right.
But people go down there and burn off their tires and have a good time, and
There's too many people nowadays, too many people that can't even change a tire or check their oil.
Right.
It's really becoming fewer people that are really tinkering on cars their own,
but
there are still people out there that want that adrenaline rush of, I can go race, and they'll go do it, but they want to do it when somebody else is doing work.
Right.
You know?
Excellent segue. I posted an inflammatory picture that said you shouldn't, you know, if you can't change a tire, you should shave your beard, right?
I don't personally have a beard to shave, but I can change a tire too. So
and there's a lot of, you know, feministic arguments as to whether or not that statement that I made was a very nice one or not, or, you know, leave guys alone. But my question is, should everybody be required to learn how to change a tire?
And that's what I was gonna say. I back you up. Everybody, my children, when they are older, they are going to at least know the basics. You know, they don't have to be in the cars, they don't have to follow my footprints, but they need to know how to check their oil and change tire, not how to dial AAA. Mm-hmm. I've seen that when I was working in Buckhead. Perfectly capable, grown men standing around watching AAA change the tires on their BMWs.
Yeah.
Roll up your sleeves, dude, you can do it. You know, I agree with you.
Well, it kills me that we're now selling cars that don't actually include a spare.
My G8 does not have a spare.
Yeah.
I'm waving my arms wildly like a crazy person.
Yeah.
It annoys me.
I ran into a Lamborghini at Caffeine and Octane one time.
And not literally.
The guy was talking about... No, not literally. not the one that had that nasty spin out in the bushes as he was leaving the thing a few years ago. You see YouTube of that. But no, a guy with a... what did he have? It was one of the high-end ones. And that wasn't a Murcielago. It was... Anyway,
mm-hmm.
probably Diablo. He was talking about how there was no spare tire with it, and a bunch of us standing around, you know, instantly drew the connection. Well, for the $150,000 or whatever you paid for it, you know, Lamborghini better send out a damn helicopter. When you have a spare, we have a flat tire.
Exactly. But so let's go back to the question, and I guess I'm just asking for a general poll. And maybe the readers will, I mean, our readers, our listeners will have their own opinions about this as well. But so, and tell us, please tell us on the Facebook page what you think. Should changing a tire be a part of basic car education? Should everyone simply get that and be able to demonstrate that they can do it?
Who's regulating this, though? I mean, is this a condition of having a driver's license?
Yeah, I would say, for the sake of argument, I would say yes.
I don't know if they could do that just because, for example, disabled people can drive a vehicle as long as the vehicle is equipped, but obviously they wouldn't be able to go out and change a tire. I don't know if I could say that this would have to be a requirement of having a driver's license. Plenty of people that don't know how to drive a car have a driver's license.
Well, just a second ago you said everyone should know how to do it.
Well, that's my personal belief, but I don't think it can be mandated by the state.
I don't think so either, although I think it might. You could probably put a couple questions about it on the written test. Maybe just at least show that you understand how it's done, even if you may not be physically able. Because maybe if somebody strong raises their hand to help you, they might need a little guidance.
And that's actually the funny part, being a woman, the amount of men that will stop and try to help you with various things, and you end up having to show them how to do it.
Oh, yeah.
It's hysterical. I have a great story about one time when my mother was watching this and laughing her butt off. And this guy didn't know that she was over in another car because I had her tailing me. But I don't know. It's tough. It's tough, especially with how things are nowadays. But I would think people would want to be more self-reliant, you know how to pump your gas. Yes, I know a woman who doesn't know how to pump her own gas.
Oh, my goodness, really?
Yeah.
I had somebody at AutoZone come in and ask me to do, like, because she was from a different country. And the country she was in, the men always do it. She's like, I don't. No, how could one of you help me? I'm like, well, I personally can't, but I mean, you can probably ask one of the attendants.
Or here, let me show you how, the whole teach a man to fish kind of philosophy. Let me show you while I'm at it how to do this.
I mean, I can understand if you grew up in a place where there's staff on hand to do it for you. I get that, but... But it's, you know, this is not rocket science. Insert tab A in the slot B and you're good to go, right? It's just...
I don't know. I think that certain basic things, what are you going to do if you're out in the middle of nowhere and you get a flat tire? Are you really going to call AAA and hope they have somebody within a couple hours distance? I don't know. I think there should be a certain level of self-reliance. That's how I am personally.
Right. And so that way I don't have to spend the money on AAA, or I don't have to wait an hour and a half for them to even show up. You know, I can change a tire in less than 5 minutes.
Exactly. I might take a little longer than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But,
I should have some contest tire.
I know if it's in AAA, they're still great for a lot of things.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a place for them. I just think people should have a certain level of being able to rely on themselves to get themselves out of a situation.
All right. So, let's switch gears down, and I'm thinking of I'm reading a message that my friend Shirley wrote to us on our Facebook page. She says, "Hey Mickey, the gizmo that makes the door lock work, I think that there's one in the door in itself and one in the frame, and they zap each other, and that makes the door lock." She says, "Anyway, sometimes when I press the button on the fob, it won't lock the door. I have to open and close the door and then try again. The battery in the fob is fine." She asks, "Is a sensor misaligned or covered with schmutz? Is there a loose wire or what?" Her Subaru, I believe it's a Forester, has 150,000 miles on it. So my first question, she didn't answer all my questions, but I think...
And I had some questions. I don't know if that got answered or not.
Well, Shirley, if you're listening, I think that we're going to try to tell you that I don't think there are two things in the car that make that device work. There's just one in the door. There's not one in the frame.
Well,
correct.
My question, though, from what it sounds like, it's only one door being affected, and it's the lock function, not the unlock function. So if she's having to open and close the door and stand there with her key fob, why doesn't she just push the soldier down and lock the door? Sounds like it would be faster, as long as the car is unlocking.
Well, not all of them will let you do that.
Shirley, we have clarifying questions. Where are you?
But yeah, that was my big thing. Is this the only feature that's not working? And it sounds like it's only not working in one direction. It's still working fine when it unlocks and all the other doors and trunks are working okay.
Right.
If that's the case, there's probably just an either worn or broken out worn or broken little piece of plastic inside the door, you know.
Right.
Probably.
Well, unless it's the solenoid switch on the inside or something like that. But if it's working to unlock the door.
Right.
But just not lock it. Right. Something slightly blocking the way when it tries to drop down,
or
perhaps.
It's also possible that if her fob has separate buttons for these two functions, one of the buttons might not be making good contact.
So it could still be the fob.
Could be. Not likely, but could be.
But wouldn't that affect all the doors?
Oh, I forgot about that. Yes,
that's why I was asking, is it one door?
She did say just one, yeah.
So, Shirley, we have questions for you. You need to get back online with us on Facebook or Facebook's probably best. And tell us a little bit more about what we need to do to help you further understand this problem. But there are not two things in the car that zap each other to lock the door. Mm. That just doesn't happen. So otherwise, we'll send Katie over and she'll take the door apart for you and just let you know.
Yes.
Cool. What else we got?
Went to a car show. A school hosted a car show. And when I got there, somebody, like 10 minutes later, this person comes with a car, and it's I forgot what type of car, but it's an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. car that was used in the Avengers movie. Like, certification and everything. And they literally just picked it up and took it straight to the car show. And, like, it has all the certification, like, hey, this is actually in the movie and all that. It baffles me because they use it as an everyday car. Because from what they said, it was cheaper to buy it that than just one off the lot from a dealership.
Hmm.
And I'm just like, I kind of understand that, but it's like, this car was in a really big movie. Like, I would be trying to get it and go into, like, conventions and stuff for free.
Is it a heavily modified car?
No, it's all painted out with the Avengers logo and all that, and has the lights, like the security police lights or whatever, on it. And I mean, I never got a chance to look under it,
when the movie company's done beating it around, it's a used car.
But a lot of people will spend big money just for its involvement in something, depending on what it's in. Was it one of the bigger cars, or was it some car in the background?
I think it was one of the... they only had like 4 or 5 of them in the movie.
So not involved in any chase scenes.
Yeah, pretty sure it was.
I do understand that it probably... Like, unless it was involved in something specific or it is a really highly stylized car, the insurance people probably are dictating the notion that it is still just a used car and not a true movie prop. Although, I'm with you. If it looks like an Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s car, I'm going to take it to Dragon Con and put it in the parade.
Yeah.
But I guess for insurance purposes, maybe it still just counts as a used car.
Yeah, and it is pretty much just a prop. You know, it's something they used. It's something nobody in the production company needs to keep, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, man, but it's still a prop. It's still a movie car. Yeah.
Well, that doesn't mean necessarily a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, something that we might have to discuss at another time, the discovery of the original bullet car.
If anybody
has read that story, what has happened. So it depends entirely on the car.
Yeah, yeah.
So
tell us. Go ahead. We can...
Okay, without having it right in front of me then. I wasn't fully prepared. apparently, and I know some of the back lore on it, that Steve McQueen, when he was done filming this movie, he wanted that car.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, the production company wouldn't let him keep it. And recently, apparently he searched for it for years, but Steve McQueen passed away rather young without finding it. But some guy down in Mexico, I can't remember if it was Mexico City or if it was just Mexico in general, had the car, and he brought it into a customization shop to turn it into an Eleanor clone. And the guy that worked at the shop was apparently just shaking, running the numbers, discovering that, no, this is the bullet car. This is the one and only. So from what I understand, the guy agreed not to change it into an Eleanor clone.
And are they going to restore it?
From what I understand, they are going to restore it. Obviously, Steve McQueen won't get it.
Sure.
But just the amazing finding that car. There wasn't a ton special about it. It was a 390 GT. It's not like it was heavily modified, but it was just that it's the bullet car.
Yeah, but
personally, any movie they make nowadays, there won't be the car. There may have been back then, but they're a lot smarter now. They use two or three of them in case they have backups.
At least, because the way they jump and crash nowadays, they have 52 backup cars.
They destroyed about 300 Chargers over the run of the Dukes of Hazzard.
Yes.
Interesting, too, when they made The Spy Who Loved Me, and of course, being the Lotus nut that I am, only I would know this, but Lotus supplied two Esprits to that production. Only one really appears in the movie because the camera vehicle couldn't keep up with it, so the other car had to be made into a camera vehicle. So here's this high-end, sports car, very swoopy Italian-style, little wedgy mid-engine exotic with a camera mount on the front, an operator strapped to the back of it, battery packs hanging off the side of it.
That's like in the movie Gone in 60 Seconds, the new version one with Nicolas Cage.
Oh, yeah.
The Mustang that did the jump on the bridge toward the end of the movie. No, it did not survive. They used a lot of Mustangs for that, and that car did not survive.
Well, in fact, toward the end of Dukes of Hazzard, they started using, the supply of old Chargers was getting a little thin, so
they weren't all the same year. Yeah. There's a whole thing in one of their things there.
Well, I forget what the other car was, but there was something that had a vaguely similar roof line that they used in some of the shots that's harder to really pick things out. And if you look at some of the late season episodes, you can kind of tell a little bit that they were fudging the car.
When did that show jump the shark?
Oh, well, there was that whole season when Bo and Luke were on strike, so they brought in the cousins. It was never the same after that. It was like it had just been tainted.
Right.
I was reading, what's Bruce Campbell's autobiography?
Don't call me Ash. Who knows? He signs autographs. Bruce, don't call me Ash Campbell. I have a friend who got his autograph down at Disney.
It's called If Chins Could Kill.
Nice.
There you go.
But he talks about the whole Oldsmobile that was used in the productions of the original Evil Dead movies. Mm. And he went back to go see it. And then after Sam Raimi made it big, he was visiting a production that Sam was working on. And he walks into this area, and there's like 11 of those Oldsmobiles lined up. And some production person there said, the one you're looking for is the one on the very end. It's the original. All the other ones are just using it elsewhere.
I think of those movies, the car never even pops into my head. It never even occurred to me. There was a car in those movies. I forgot about that.
But Bullet, a completely almost stock, in fact, a completely stock Mustang, has stayed in everybody's mind. Mm-hmm. Right? That car is legendary. Why is not a Shield car legendary? And...
Because Bullet. Because Bullet. Because Steve McQueen.
Right. Great movie on a lot of levels.
Well, let's wrap this episode up for today. We need to talk about this some more. Thanks once again for joining us. This is The Thing About Cars coming to you from Strongbox West. Check them out at strongboxwest.com. And check us out, please, at thethingaboutcars.com or send us a note via our Facebook page. You can find us there at The Thing About Cars. Hope to talk to you again soon. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.